Health and Human Services Finance Committee will come to order. Representative Heinzman, have you had a chance to take a look at the minutes from yesterday?
I have. In fact, I would move the minutes.
Representative Heinzman moves the approval of minutes for February 14th. Any additions, corrections, or changes? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Minutes are approved. Members, we have in front of us file 597, and in lieu of Representative Dean not being here, Representative Franzen, will you move House File 597, please?
Absolutely.
Representative Franzen moves 597 before the committee. Representative Franzen, I understand that you may want to introduce the bill through your testifier today.
Mm-hmm. So House File 597 would reimburse White Earth for its out-of-home placement, foster care, and adoptive services for Native American children. Last session, as you recall, we heard this bill. Language and money was included in the House and Senate omnibus bills, but when we reviewed our targets in conference committee, there was not enough money for the Indian Child Welfare Program. So as we begin the budget process this year, we are presenting the request for funding this program. I have here with me Lori York. She is the White Earth ICW Director. She is here to review the history and success of the program.
Ms. York, welcome to the committee. If you could give your name for the record and commence with your testimony. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. My name is Lori York, and I'm the Director of White Earth Indian Child Welfare.
Welcome to the committee. You may continue.
Okay. So the history was that White Earth Indian Child Welfare entered the initiative in 2007, and since then we have been, or I should say the Indian Child Welfare took over jurisdiction exclusively of three counties. That would be Becker County, Menomon County, and Clearwater County for the initiative. And we have an unmet need of $1.6 million to operate that initiative. And last year we did request the $1.6 million as a continuum funding to cover our unmet needs. In return, we estimate that we saved the three counties at least $5 million in child welfare costs. In support of the request, White Earth gathered statistics from SSIS demonstrating the increased needs since the original funding appropriation. The original funding appropriation was based on 2004 brass codes, and there has never been an ongoing sustainable increase. The statistics that I'll be going over from 2011 and 2016 will show that those needs are there. In 2011, White Earth received 394 child welfare intakes, 251 maltreatment reports, 80 of which were through Child Protection Services, and 13 were voluntary. There were 218 adults plus 255 children served for the total of 473 clients open for case management. There were 193 cases open for assessments and case management. In 2016, White Earth ICW received 932 child maltreatment intakes, 292 assessments, 37 voluntary cases were open at the start of the year, with an additional 36 of them throughout the year, and 22 of them were successfully closed, with the remaining of 51 cases remaining voluntary that are currently open. There were 398 adults served and 485 children served for a total of 883 clients open for services. There are currently 222 open cases for assessments and case management. Our highlights for 2016 include a total of 119 children reunified and 86 children on a trial home visit with their parents currently. There were 44 customary adoptions completed, and 27 children did not enter care nor have any court involvement with the new prevention program, Kijawaso, which was was the disparities grant that was awarded to White Earth. In partnership with the White Earth Moms Program, we were able to present several of our babies being born with positive opiate withdrawals, and we kept additional children with their families. Together, there was 110 children prevented from out-of-home placement and child protection services through the intervention services. White Earth had a significant amount of 4E cases pulled for a federal audit this year, with additional tribally licensed foster care cases pulled in the county audit cases. Weyerth as an agency, as well as our tribally licensed foster homes, passed this 4E audit. Some of the children who are in relative care and family homes or pre-adoptive homes for rates for federal standards was 45%. The statewide standard was 50.6, and Weyerth Nation exceeded the state and federal with 59.2. With foster care reentry, the federal standard was 83%. We're supposed to either meet or below the standard. Statewide is 18.8. Weyerth Nation exceeded with 3.2. The number of placement moves with our children, the federal standard was 4.12 and statewide was 4.15. Weyerth Nation, 2.5. We exceeded with performance with the federal and state standards there as well. Weyerth, through the Indian Child Welfare Initiative, has provided a high quality of culturally specific services to a large number of tribal families. These culturally specific services impact future generations, ultimately saving money and breaking the cycle of child protection, as we're currently proving with our statistics. We have creative new programming that has allowed the tribe to intervene in child welfare matters and avoid out-of-home placements while safely maintaining children at home with their parents. These culturally specific programs have been more widely accepted and impacting. We are respectfully requesting your financial support of $1.6 million to be added on to the base rate as a continuum for our writers to continue to reduce the financial burden for our counties and to impact our child protection services. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify on behalf of the bill? Members, any questions? Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for this proposal. I'm really interested in getting more information. You may not have it now, but about the $5 million in savings, and just kind of get detail on that as far as timing and kind of how that's calculated, and understand that more. If you could just maybe provide that afterwards, appreciate. I don't know if you have any detail you can share now.
Ms. York.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. I don't have the specific statistic, but I can follow up in writing with that. But my understanding of this is that Weyerth Indian Child Welfare has the initiative base rate, and it doesn't cover all the out-of-home costs. The actual cost is $4 million for the out-of-home placement costs. So the tribe comes up with other ways to pay for those costs with using different funds and different budgets, and then we also have a grant that helps us in covering some of those costs. If we didn't cover those costs, the tribe, that would be something that the counties would have had to have paid for, and that's how we are saving that $5 million. But as far as actual statistical information, I could get that for you in writing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would love to get that. I guess it sounds from what you're saying like right now it's not that the counties are having to spend that extra money. The tribe is just having to go to other sources to make up that difference. If I'm understanding what you're saying correctly.
Yes, that's correct.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And then, Mr. Chair, I guess I would ask if you could provide some provide more information on that. I'd appreciate that. Just some details on the savings. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Leland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your presentation. I know sometimes the voice starts happening, you don't know where it's coming from, right? I was going to ask sort of the same question. I was going to ask you what happened last session when you didn't get the money that you had asked for, because I take it from Representative Franzen's presentation that this was a request that got dropped in the last round of budgeting. And so, but I think you kind of answered that already, but if there's, maybe you have more to add to, what was the result of not getting the appropriation last time?
Mr. House, welcome to the committee. If you could identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bill Haas, and I represent Weyerth Tribal Nation. Mr. Chair and Representative Leibling, what happened is we had this 1.6 in the House bill and the Senate bill. Went to conference committee that way, and when the chairs got their target, and we started working through it. We also had another initiative for $1.4 million. And so they came to us at the end and said, look, we can't do both. And so we said we'd do the ongoing money for the administration for the human services transfer we had done. And they said, okay, then bring this back next year, do the budget year. And so we gave it up just so that they could provide spending in other areas also that they wanted to do.
Representative Liebling.
Yeah, thank you very much. Actually, and that's interesting here. I guess my real question was sort of what happened when the money wasn't available. But I think Ms. York kind of answered that it, you know, that the cost gets shifted and you had other sources, but... maybe unless you have more to add to that, but that was more the thrust of my question. Yeah. Like, what happens when you don't get? Or let me ask it a different way: what will happen if you don't get it this time?
Mr. Haas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling. What would happen is what White Earth is doing currently. They're taking money from other programs that are critical to cover these costs because they feel that the children, you know, in this foster care, out of home placement, it's critical to provide stability in their lives.
So. Thank you. Any further questions for the testifier? Final comments, Representative Frenzen?
None.
Members, House File 597 is laid over for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Representative Fenton. Yeah. Welcome to the committee, Representative Fenton. I will move House File 501 before the committee. And with that, Representative Fenton, if you could give us an outline in terms of what this bill does.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know some of you have seen this from the previous committee, but I do want to share a simple story and how this came about. About 10 years ago, I was driving my daughter to an event, and we happened upon the scene of a suicide. So it started a very serious conversation with the young little girl, probably questions I wasn't comfortable answering for her as to why would somebody do this and whatnot. And I wanted to get one point across to her, that no matter what happened in life, no matter the mistakes you make, you are loved and you can always find someone to talk to. So she observed that for a while in the back seat, and she asked, Mom, what happens if there's nobody around to talk to when I need them? So this is what House File 501 is about. There are two parts to this. The first is appropriation for the Voice Response Suicide Prevention and Mental Health Crisis Program. And the second is a smaller appropriation for the Text Message Suicide Prevention and Mental Health Crisis Program. And in the manner of brevity, I am going to turn it over to Dr. Matthew Eastwood to discuss the program that they run.
Dr. Eastwood, welcome to the committee. If you could identify yourself for the record, then commence with your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Matthew Eastwood. I'm the Chief Executive Officer for Canvas Health, which is a community mental health center located in Oakdale, Minnesota. I would like to thank Representative Fenton for agreeing to serve as chief author for House File 501. Canvas Health began nearly 50 years ago as a community mental health center in Washington County. Since that time, we've expanded to 35 programs, 10 clinics around the metro area, and in addition to that, we currently run the voice response service, crisis connection, and text for life program. I'm here today to testify on House File 501, appropriating funding to stabilize voice response, suicide prevention, and mental health crisis response program, and to expand statewide the text message response program. These services are operated out of Crisis Connection currently. Crisis Connection is a telephonic and voice response center that's located in Richfield, Minnesota. Crisis Connection was founded in 1969 and was acquired in 2010 by Canvas Health. Crisis Connection provides immediate access to persons who are at risk of suicide or who are having a mental health crisis, and their mission is to create a place in which no one in crisis will ever be alone. Both the voice response and text response services are staffed by qualified professionals and trained volunteer counselors who respond 24 hours a day, 365 days a year to callers or texters. All of our counselors are certified on ASSIST, which is Applied Suicide Intervention Skills Training, an evidence-based practice. The services are free and confidential to anyone who wants to access them, and our trained counselors will triage and screen, stabilize the caller, and help them reach a place of emotional and physical safety. They refer individuals to available community resources, which are available to help them with the longer-term issues that may be underlying their current distress. Crisis Connection is the only crisis center in Minnesota that is currently accredited by the American Association of Suicidology and Contact USA. We're also the only response to voice callers who are routed to us through the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. We administer the Minnesota Gambling Helpline, the Sowing Seeds of Hope Rural Line on behalf of the state of Minnesota. We also operate three incoming text lines, including the Text for Life program. The Text for Life program is currently in 54 counties, and we work with all of the sovereign tribal nations. We also operate the University of Minnesota Crisis Text Line and the Minnesota Gambling Text Line on behalf of the state of Minnesota. Crisis Connection currently delivers these services with 23.7 FTEs and by leveraging over 100 volunteers who donate about 12,000 hours a year to our services. In 2016, we had the following impact in response. We handled nearly 36,000 telephone conversations and 11,000 text conversations. Those 11,000 text conversations translate into over 400,000 individual text messages incoming and outgoing by our staff. We served over 6,000 people who reported themselves to be at moderate to high risk to harm themselves, to commit suicide, if you will, and another 26,000 people who presented with a mental health crisis. We dispatched emergency responders, law enforcement, and EMS nearly 400 times or more than once a day. We made over 1,500 referrals to mobile crisis teams around the state, and we made over 15,000 referrals for ongoing mental health and chemical health services. Crisis Connection has significant brand recognition in the community, often marketed by the media, by counties, by the state, and by private providers. A simple Google search will result in more than 33,000 hits. One of our board members actually did a bit of research, and in 2 hours he found over 800 individual providers, clinics, or health systems who list the Crisis Connection number on their website. As you know, the Minnesota Department of Health reports that the number of suicides in Minnesota has grown steadily over the past decade. Minnesota Center for Health Statistics states that suicide is the ninth leading cause of death in Minnesota in 2013. In 2014, 683 people committed suicide in Minnesota for an age-adjusted suicide rate of 12.2 per 100,000, which is just a bit short of the 12.9 per 100,000 that is the national average. Tragically, American Indian youth between the ages of 10 and 24 have the highest age-specific rate of suicide in the state of Minnesota at 30.7 per 100,000. This means that they are three times more likely to kill themselves than their peers. Perhaps surprisingly to many of us is the fact that middle-aged men between the ages of 50 and 64 have the second highest age-adjusted rate at 29.5. Research tells us that 90% of these people have an underlying mental health or substance abuse issue, and we know that behind each of these suicides is a story of a loved one, a neighbor, a friend, a colleague, co-worker. The total effect of a death by suicide not only is felt across communities, but it's felt across generations. We know these deaths can be prevented. Proper intervention does exist, and we can help people get to the right treatment and the right help to prevent further deterioration. As Representative Fenton mentioned, this funding request is really divided in two parts, but they are integrated and support one another. The first is a voice response service sustainability request for $1,386,534 per fiscal year. Crisis Connections Voice Response Service does not receive base funding from the state of Minnesota to operate. In calendar year 2016, we received $8,487 from the Minnesota Department of Agriculture for the Sowing Seeds of Hope rural line and $125,000 from the Department of Human Services for the Minnesota Gambling Helpline. In addition, from managing over 9,000 calls on the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, we received $3,500 from the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, federal government. Other funding for voice response comes from a small group of counties and entities who purchase telephonic services. The voice response service has experienced regular losses during the time that we have owned it. Over the past 5 years, our losses have totaled approximately $900,000, an amount that is in the long term unsustainable for my agency. This funding would allow us to add 6.35 FTEs of professional staff and increase compensation to a more competitive level for the current staff. It anticipates the call answer rate would increase to a projected 50,000 calls per year from the current level of 36,000, and the funds would sustain the voice response operation from now and into the future, ensuring that this service would continue. As for the text response service, the request there is $657,313 per year. And thanks to the efforts of the legislature, In 2015, the text response services received $1.125 million of funding during that legislative session. And while we greatly appreciated that, and that allowed us to begin to do this work and expand it on a statewide level, it was less than the amount that we had projected would be required to spread this out through the entire state, and that has borne out. With the funds that requested that we have received so far, we have been able to provide text response services statewide and hire regional coordinators for 54 counties and the sovereign tribal nations. We currently have 8 regional coordinators and 2 tribal liaisons and a contract for a 9th regional coordinator. The role of the regional coordinator is somewhat unique in that these people are out in the community, they're of the community, and they're doing the education. They're going into the schools, they're going to health fairs, they're going to different organizations in the community and doing presentations on a Text for Life program. That's when we really see those numbers take off. In your packet should be a picture of the state. The colored areas are those that are currently covered by a regional coordinator. You'll see the middle part of the state is gray. Those are the areas that are not currently covered by a regional coordinator. I should clarify, we don't turn away anyone who texts us. So if you're texting us from Hennepin County, we answer that text even though we don't have a regional coordinator there. We're simply not advertising the program. When we put a regional coordinator into that area, that's when the volume takes off and really grows. The proposal expands the use of regional coordinators by 4 to 6 statewide and provides the necessary capacity within the text center to accommodate thousands of additional text messages with an additional 7.4 FTEs of texting staff. It's anticipated this greater text volume will be created through the increased awareness generated by the regional coordinators. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I want to thank you for this opportunity to come before you this afternoon and for your consideration of House File 501. This concludes my testimony, and I'd certainly be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. We have a couple of other testifiers. Representative Penton, would you prefer that we take that testimony before we go to questions?
I think let's hear the testimony, and then we'll take questions at the end.
I have Shanna Mulville on the list next, so if you could make your way towards the table. Welcome to the committee, and if you could just state your name for the record, and then you can proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members, I'm Shanna Mulvihill, Executive Director of Mental Health Minnesota and co-chair of the Mental Health Legislative Network. First, I'd like to express the network's support of the bill. The network has long recognized the need and importance of building our comprehensive mental health system in our state that meets the needs of people living with mental illness. Access to crisis services is certainly a key part of meeting that need. The suicide rate in Minnesota hit a record high in 2015. Services like Crisis Connection and Text for Life help people across Minnesota who are struggling. They offer an upstream level of help that is a crucial part of our continuum of mental health services in our state. I also want to speak about my experience as a volunteer at Crisis Connection. I completed my master's degree in counseling in 2008 and did my clinical work for my degree at Crisis Connection. So I logged a little over 700 hours on the phone, taking hundreds of calls during that time. Answered calls at 2 in the afternoon and 3 in the morning. Calls from people who were struggling with difficult symptoms of their illness, isolation, and suicidal thoughts. And there are still some I think about even years later. The call from a farmer in southwestern Minnesota who was struggling with symptoms of depression and anxiety, but didn't feel like he could talk about it with family or friends. The call from a woman who needed someone on the phone with her while she climbed up to her highest kitchen cabinet. That was where she stored her bottle of sleeping pills so she didn't take them all that night. The call from a young man on his cell phone standing on a lift bridge in Duluth who told me he wanted to end his life. I spent more than an hour on the phone with him, eventually able to get emergency personnel out to get him the help he needed. So many people in our state had turned to Crisis Connection and Text for Life when they didn't know where else to go for help. Services like these do play a key role in our state's response to mental health crisis. I do appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Thank you. And lastly, we have Monica Shevick. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Shevick. Please state your name for the record and continue with your testimony.
Monica Shevick. Good afternoon, members of the committee and chairman. I'm present today to encourage the support and funding for Text for Life and Crisis Connection. And to help you understand this need, I'm sharing part of the life story of my son, Sean Shevick. Sean was a very loving, compassionate, talented, caring person, and besides being a loving son, brother, uncle, and friend, Sean was also a highly skilled critical care paramedic for Lakeview Health. He was also a well-trained firefighter for White Bear Lake, and he was a certified massage therapist. Sean was constantly helping others with their needs, body, mind, and spirit, and sadly, even with all the skills that Sean had, Sean was not able to use those skills to save his own life. So on the day after Christmas, on 2013, Sean died at age 39 by suicide. He lost his dark, lonely battle with depression and other brain health issues. On that day that he died, Sean was reaching out to a loved one, and that loved one was desperately trying to help Sean in any way she could. She and we were not aware of things like Text for Life or Crisis Connection. We didn't know they were available to us. The person that was helping Sean that day was also struggling with her own depression. And after Sean died, her depression tanked. Months later, that individual found out about Text for Life. And she used it a couple of times to help her through crises. And in her own words, and I quote, "Text for Life was really non-threatening and the perfect type of help that I needed at the time. I didn't want to talk to anyone because I didn't want to talk out loud. I just wanted someone to text, like how I used to text Sean. Text for Life really helped me by just being available, and it gave me comfort knowing that someone was always on the other line." Well, since Sean's death, not to be redundant here, but we've learned that reported suicides take far more lives than murder, fatal car crashes, opioid overdoses, weather-related deaths, texting while driving, and so on. Suicide's huge. And many of the deaths go unreported. It's the 10th leading cause of deaths in the as a whole for all age groups in the nation. You know, you hear about campaigns for opioid abuse and texting for while driving and diabetes and cancer, but you don't ever hear anything about suicide and helping that.
It needs to be addressed. We need to stop that stigma, and we need to get it the help. And Text for Life and Crisis Connection is something that could do that. Brain health, mental health, suicide needs to just be brought out in the open and talked more about it. We have to realize that we're here to stop the pain. And we also have to realize that each one of us have mental health, whether we care to admit it or not. We all have brains, and we all are going to have a crisis sometimes, big or small. And it would be really nice to know that help was available. Though we carry the grief for Sean in our hearts, we've been very encouraged by the hope and health services offered by Canvas Health, Text for Life, Crisis Connection, NAMI, and SAVE. Since Sean's death, people have really opened up to us, and fortunately or unfortunately, our family and friends have become the go-to people when they have crisis in their lives with mental health. No longer do we have to ask, oh, geez, what do I say to them and what do I do? Besides taking the time to listen to them, we refer them. We carry those numbers with us, and we refer them to Text for Life and Canvas Health and NAMI. And many of them have reached out and gotten the help that they needed. It is so good to know that we are not alone and that help is here. We feel empowered by Text for Life and Crisis Connection, and feel so strongly that we need to keep funding these. Honestly, Sean and many others like him could still be helping and healing and saving lives if they could have reached out and gotten that help that was there. I really urge you to fund Text for Life and Crisis Connection, as well as other mental health services for care and treatment of the brain and the mind. And lastly, thanks for everything you guys do. I know it's a daunting task. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions for the author of the bill or for the testifiers? Is there anyone from the audience who would like to testify on behalf of the bill? Representative Haley.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the testimony to the mother who just spoke. I'm curious about your connection with the Make It Okay campaign. We hear a lot about that, and it's been, I think, effective in helping to eliminate stigma around mental illness, and just curious how your efforts might connect with them.
Mr. Chair, Representative, in Washington County, where we are located, where Canvas Health has its main office, we work closely with the various representatives. We are a part of the Make It Okay campaign. We're working with them in that particular area in Washington County. That's our focus currently. But we're engaged with that program. We work closely with the Stillwater Medical Group, like New Hospital, and others who are doing that work.
Thank you.
Representative Haley?
Yep. And secondly, just connecting with high schools. I know you said when the counselors that you have in all these areas, obviously you do a lot of outreach, and high school kids are, I have a teenager, they text all the time. I can see how your service was very spot on for that age group. So how often are you able to get into high schools with high school counselors or student groups to make them aware of your service?
Dr. Eastwood.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, it's a great question. The focus of the regional coordinators is just that. They are out in the schools all the time, every week, doing presentations. It's the one time where kids are told that they can bring their phones to an assembly. We educate them on a variety of factors, on Text for Life, on identifying depression, on understanding and seeing mental health issues or concerns in their friends, and how to make a referral, how to do that work. The kids all take out their phone and they put the Text for Life number in it in case their friend needs it, knowing that they might also use it as well. I can't give you an exact number, but I can tell you that my staff sent me a list of outcomes and meetings they held for 2016, and the single space, it ran to 29 pages of events. They had either been in a school, They've been at a health fair. They've been out in a community meeting, educating people, handing out materials, and spreading that word. So they're in schools all the time. That really is their function and their goal.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Fenton. This is an important service, and I'm just wondering, with the appropriation, it looks like most of it is for voice service, some of it is for text. Will the levels you've requested be sufficient to actually cover the entire state, including the metro area?
Dr. Eastwood.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, when we, if we take into account the original $1.125 million that we've been receiving for Text for Life and add to that the additional $600,000, we believe that that will allow us to cover the entire state with regional coordinators and enough text counselors to address 95% of the texts that come in, 95 to 100. Currently we're at 100%, but it's always possible to get overwhelmed. As an example, when a celebrity like Robin Williams commits suicide, the numbers spike so aggressively that it's virtually impossible to stay ahead of that. So hitting 100% forever is not really realistic. But we think we'll be in that 95 to 100% range. And the funding that we're requesting for the voice side, we believe, would allow us to increase by nearly 15,000 the number of calls that we currently answer.
Thank you.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, my question got answered, but I do want to thank the testifier, Mrs. Shrivick, with her story. I actually recently hosted a group in this room, and somebody said, why is there clinics at the table? And I said, because this is where we have HHS meetings, and we cry here. because, you know, we hear stories like this, and I think that I really want Mrs. Shrivick to know what a difference hearing stories like this makes in terms of the way we make public policy. So keep telling the story. Keep bringing these issues to us. I'm happy to hear the expansion that's happening because I know when we first heard this bill, there wasn't enough service for the whole state to be able to have Text for Life, and it's wonderful that we're moving in this direction. And I had a mom in my office today who said that she had a very sick, physically sick baby when her baby was born, and she got a lot of casseroles and people visiting, and then she had a child who in his teen years was mentally ill, and she said nobody came. And so I really want us as a healthcare committee to make sure that we're thinking about the way we support the mental health of our state as well as the physical health.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank Representative Fenton for carrying this bill, first of all. And during Monica's testimony, I just want to thank you for that. Just a few years before your son his life, my boyhood friend, Caleb, took his life. And while you were talking, you know, I pulled up his Facebook page, and that's hard. But I appreciate that you're willing to talk about it, because it's hard to talk about it sometimes. And that still can be a blessing to a lot of people and give some people some hope. And my friend Caleb, as a matter of fact, he did reach out to some people, and a lot of people did try to intervene in his life, and I'm grateful for that, because it's not as though he was just slipped through the cracks. And while you can't necessarily save everybody who's on that edge, there was some opportunity there. There was a lifeline, and so I think this does have value.
Any other testifiers? Yes.
I'm going to say it quick, and I could probably do a little microphone. Sonic Center in Whiter Lake.
We still need for you to.
Oh, yeah, Mark Hughes. And the Masonic Center in White Bear Lake is where we have Masons and Shriners and all that. And I didn't know Sean,
Mr.
but
Hughes.
I do know that the White Bear Lake Fire Department does a lot of good community service.
Mr. Hughes, could we have you just nudge yourself towards the microphone just so we can make sure we have it on the record?
Okay, sure. I'm bashful, you know.
Appreciate your indulgence.
Thank you. Sorry about that. I'm Mark Hughes, and I wanted to testify for the bill. While I didn't know Sean, I do know a little bit about the White Bear Lake Fire Department as our Masonic Center, which holds Masons and Shriners up there. that does a lot for the community. And so when you have a Text for Life program, well, it costs money to do it, heavenly costs money, but if you can save a life, then the program pays for itself. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hughes. Any other testifiers? Any other questions? Final thoughts, Representative Fenton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think we've heard the importance of this program. As a matter of fact, sadly, over 10 years ago, what my daughter and I came up on is somebody just parked their car on the overpass, literally got out and had jumped over. And unfortunately, right before this hearing over the weekend, as I was preparing for this, I read a story exactly the same. Somebody on the same highway jumped off the overpass. And so I ask, there is definitely a need, and I ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Feston. Members, I'll just call your attention to the fiscal note that is in your packets. And the purpose and or the justification for the fiscal note is that DHS has requested that an additional full one FTE is requested to oversee the fiscal grant and data management components of this this fund. So with that, House File 501 is laid over for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill.
Thank you.
Next up, we have House File 614. Welcome to the committee, Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move House File 614.
Representative Lunan moves House File 614. And this is going to be laid over for possible inclusion in the HHS Service Omnibus Bill. Okay, you can continue with your testimony. I understand you might have an author's amendment.
We do have an A1 amendment, correct.
Would you like to take that up first?
Yes, I would. The A1 amendment, what it does is it to change, put a monies appropriated under the section shall be distributed according to the statute 145A.131.
Representative Lunan, you're moving the A1 amendment to be adopted under House Bill 614. All those in favor of adopting the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion. Ayes prevail. And it is adopted. You have the bill in the form that you prefer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Out of respect for the members' time, I'm a new member here, and I probably know the least about some of these topics, as all of you do. But I notice there's a student up in the audience, and I want to talk to you. What you hear here today is things that government's trying to do to make things better. And when I got assigned to this committee, Chair Dean told me that get ready, Lunan, because this is a committee where there will be three good things to do, and we usually only can do two. And the message is that all of these ailments that are out there, these people that are hurting, that are in bad situations, are everywhere. They're right by you. They aren't strangers and not in another part of the state necessarily. They're in your town. Almost all of them are trying to look like they're not in a bad situation. So I challenge you, just like challenge everyone else here, to reach out to the people that are right around you to make that difference and be somebody's story locally, because government, what we agree on is government can't do everything. What we debate is what government should do. So that's what's going on here today in the hearing. I see you're taking notes. And of course, I would be remiss not to tell you, for God's sake, don't take that hair for granted, because that goes away too.
Representative Lunan, I understand you have a couple of testifiers.
I do. I've got two testifiers here. This is a appropriation for public health to take care of some of the frontline things we're trying to do that are environmental in nature regarding people's health. So I'll just turn it over to the testifiers for them to take it from here.
Welcome to the committee, and if you could state your name for the record and commence with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Lorna Schmidt. I'm the director of the Local Public Health Association of Minnesota, also known as LPHA. We represent more than 220 public health directors, supervisors, and community health administrators from city, county, and tribal public health departments all throughout our state. We are here in support of House File 614, which, as Representative Lunan said, would increase funding to the local public health grant. We want to thank him for his leadership on this issue. I would also like to quickly note that this is a bill that is also supported by the Association of Minnesota Counties and the Minnesota Intercounty Association. The local public health grant is the state's main investment in core functions of government that are mandated to local public health by state statute. It provides flexible funding to community health boards and tribal nations all throughout our state, and it gives local leaders control to put the dollars where they are needed most in our communities. As a result of past funding cuts to public health, the grant has decreased as a percentage of funding over time. In 2015, this grant made up just 6% of local public health expenses. By contrast, local tax levies accounted for 32%, more than $107 million of all local public health expenses. In total, nearly half of local public health funding is locally generated. This over-reliance on local tax levies has stressed our local public health system to a breaking point, and it's the health and safety of our communities that are directly impacted. With me today is Renee Foundings, an LPHA member and the Public Health Division Director for Stearns County. At this point, I'm going to turn things over to her so she can share more about the challenges currently facing our local public health agencies, their communities, and the importance of reinvesting in the local public health grant.
Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and commence with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Renee Foundings. I'm the Public Health Division Director for Stearns County. And I appreciate the opportunity to testify today. Local public health agencies across Minnesota are the backbone of prevention and early response to community issues and community priorities, and provide, as Luna said, core functions of government that work to keep our citizens healthy and safe. Over the past several years, this framework of protection and prevention has been crumbling. I am not exaggerating in saying that in many parts of the state, both in the rural parts of Minnesota as well as in the metro, that this system is in crisis. I have worked for the citizens of Stearns County for nearly 30 years, and I'm proud of all the work that we've done, and I'm here to tell you we have excellent staff working in our community. So it is very hard for me to say today that where we are right now is not only are we struggling to get our work done, work that is statutorily required, but what we are doing, we are not doing well. Past cuts in state funding with little or no increases have placed the burden on the local tax levy, and it's only because of those funds that we've actually been able to continue to fill the gap as long as what we have. However, counties and cities have limited resources and growing needs and can no longer continue to pour local tax into maintaining this system, effectively eliminating their ability to exercise local control. I have just a few examples that I want to share with you. When the stabbing and shooting occurred in our community at the local mall, they immediately reached out to us in local public health, and we moved into action. We were able to work collaboratively with our mental health community to have mental health specialists available the next day for all mall workers that wanted it. We were able to send a couple staff over to the mall before it reopened to make sure that everything was in place. But that's where our capacity has ended. We have people telling us they're afraid to be out in the community, and yet we cannot help address it. Our community is struggling with the ability to heal, while partners are looking to public health as a neutral party to convene the community. There is no one available in our offices to do the work. We have newly arrived individuals into our community. We have TB prevention and intervention work that needs to happen. This is mandatory work that we're required to do. We're currently holding referrals. Providers are calling us, asking us why we are not doing what we're required to do in a timely manner, and our answer has to be there is not enough staff available to do the work. We have a large number of sexually transmitted infections occurring across our community. Our partners in the health systems are seeking our assistance, and we have to tell them that there is no one available to help. We have pockets of under-immunized communities. Our community providers are worried. They call us and ask us to do something to help, and we can't. There is no one that we can have available to do the work. Lastly, we have schools concerned about alcohol, drug, and opioid use by students, and they are wanting to do something about it. They need public health to partner in order for them to get certain grants. We can't be there. There is no one available to do the work. These are just a few examples, and this is just my community. Similar stories like this are happening all over Minnesota. Our first line of defense at the core of the community's health is struggling and needs help. The main source of the state investment in Minnesota's local public health system is the local public health grant. These flexible dollars provide county and city policymakers with the ability to direct dollars to areas where it's needed. A reinvestment in the local public health infrastructure will close the gap that have continued to grow between the resources available and what's needed to help relieve the local tax levy, which has increasingly carried the burden of the expanding community needs, and finally restore local control. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Is there anyone in the audience that would like to speak to the bill in front of us? Members, questions for the testifiers or for the author? Representative Liebling.
Mr. Chair, and to the testifier, thank you for your testimony. I might have missed this, but do public health agencies do anything with suicide?
Mr. Chair. Excuse me, I'm having a hard time pronouncing your last name.
Okay, I understand. Frowndienst. Frowndienst. Like if you're frowning and then Dienst.
Thank you.
But that's okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, right now the only thing that we're doing is we have a youth services task force that is part of our Human Services Advisory Committee, and they have taken on the issue of mental health and reaching out to their students, but that is it. We do have quite a bit of work going on in our community around mental health. We have been asked to participate, and when we're available, we go, but again, we have limited capacity.
Representative Liebling.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, you know, I'm responding to the discussion we just had on another bill about, you know, the critical nature of services for people who may be experiencing a crisis that may lead to suicide. And, of course, we know that there are a lot of other kinds of crises people may find themselves in, and that I'm a big believer in public health, but if we were to expand the capacity of the public health agencies, would this be an area that there would be more activity in?
Ms. Frowndienst.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, members of the committee, we did a survey of our local public health agencies and asked them to give us some ideas on if they received additional dollars, what would they do? And mental health almost consistently has come up as an area that they would like to add additional staff to address. That's a high priority, I think, across Minnesota, I think across the United States. And pretty consistently, yes, I believe local public health would be at the table leading and convening around this particular issue.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Representative Halverson, did I see you raise your hand?
You did, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Just quickly, I want to say this bill comes before us on a really auspicious day. I have learned today that the county averages of Dakota County has had a huge spike in preterm births in our county. We're one of the higher counties in the nation, in the state, which really took me by surprise. And I learned this in the context of learning more about visiting nurse programs and that particular need. And I think it really underscores the need for us to use our public health dollars at the local level, because our communities, our state is large and our communities are unique. And to be able to respond to a change like that quickly seems really important. And frankly, I was kind of shocked that I didn't know about that before, because it seems like we should really be responding quickly and be aware of this particular issue in our county. And so I am just saying this in terms of this is the right way to spend public dollars, and that we know that prevention is incredibly important, and public health is incredibly important, and we know as a state we do not invest to the levels that we need to. So this is a really important step, and thanks to Representative Lumen for bringing it forward.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to LPHA, to the testifiers. I am wondering how you see this appropriation fitting in with what is currently underway with the statewide health improvement program.
Ms. Brown-Deans.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I think that's a really good question. The SHIP dollars actually target tobacco, exercise, nutrition, and that is also a high priority across communities in Minnesota. So those dollars are targeted towards those interventions. The local public health grant dollars, which are general funds, are the dollars that local governments use to target those other priorities, such as mental health, family home visiting, those other things that I mentioned, disease prevention and control activities. So they complement each other. The local public health grant gives more flexibility to target what SHIP might not be able to be used for.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so does LPHA have a position or a perspective on SHIP and its ongoing appropriation and in relationship to this piece of legislation?
Ms. Brown-Deans. Or?
Mr. Chair and Representative. Yes, the LPHA supports the continuation of SHIP funding. As Renee mentioned, we view them as complementary, but not an either-or. So although it's important to continue those investments in obesity prevention, tobacco prevention, we know those are the leading causes of chronic disease, but we know there are many other issues that need attention at the local level that fall outside of that. And those are the areas that have been hit the most by past funding cuts, and so those are the areas where we see these dollars being reinvested most.
Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I heard in Ms. Fronheis the testimony about how she's turning down opportunities for her staff to be engaged with community partners on a variety of issues, and that's dismaying to me because I've always felt like one of the strengths of our local public health system is that they have been real catalysts and conveners and supporters of community efforts, so that when a community is confronting an issue, whether it's preterm births or maternal depression or it's opioid epidemics or other issues, it's often the local public health agency that takes the lead to invite the school personnel and the first responders and others together to kind of brainstorm, get the data together so they know what the real facts are, and then look at the research of what's worked well in other communities. So I've always felt like they're one of the strongest people coming to the team that's trying to identify a locally identified issue. And these kind of dollars is what makes it possible for them to have that local leadership. And I'm hoping that we'll be able to include this in the final bill.
Final thoughts, Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I want to thank the committee for taking the time for hearing this request and the nature of some of the questions. I'm on other committees that were dealing with health care and the cost of health care, and I'm convinced that the future of health care is health, and the mandates of public health are prevention, preparedness, response, and recovery, the first of which is prevention. And this is one of the frontline items on it, and so I request the support.
With that, House File 614, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill.
Thank you very much.
Members, our next meeting is tomorrow, Thursday, February 16th at 1 o'clock. With that, the meeting is adjourned.